I came back from Africa, from Uganda, a little over a week and a half ago, and showed up to a snowstorm. Anybody grateful the snow's gone? Anybody here? All right, a few of us are grateful the snow is gone. Said no five-year-old ever, right? Because they love it. They love to play in it. And jumping back into the snow again, I started thinking about this thing that we used to hold on to. Is we held on to it with pride. Back in the 1960s, on our license plates, we used to write Winter Wonderland. Like, we embraced this thing, and I thought we might as well embrace it because it's coming either direction, and we might as well have fun in it, right? And I went outside, actually, when I got back from Africa, 80-degree weather, stepped outside, went, man, this is cold. And I stepped outside, and our dog, not mine, but David's dog, our son's dog, jumped into the snow for the very first time. Here's a picture of her right here. And out in the front yard, I made a snowball, and I threw it her direction. Kind of threw it at her, but just off the direction from her. And she picked it up, because she's a retriever, and bit down on it, and was going to bring it back, and decided, man, this tastes really good. I really like it. And what she proceeded to do is started to eat a circle around it. She was going berserk, like something was going on in her head, like God has rained down some kind of dog manna on this front yard. This stuff is amazing. Looked over at me, almost as if to say, there's way too much. Join in, come on, I can't eat all of this. And I actually laughed pretty hard about that. And this morning, that happened in the neighborhood. Got nothing to do with the neighborhood, but I just want to tell the story. And this morning I want to talk about neighbors and neighborhoods and backyards. What happens in your yard? Where is your backyard? How big is your neighborhood? Who's your neighbor? Because we're living in a world that often what kind of news we hear is kind of bad news. And we're meant to be good news. We live in a world where we often will hear about violence, and we're meant to paint the world beautiful with the way that we live, to bring hope and to give rise to beautiful things. We have neighbors, and all of us who have neighbors, doesn't matter if your neighbor, the next one is 5 miles away because you live way out in the country, or you live in a neighborhood and they're right next door, all of us have neighbors who are either good neighbors or bad neighbors, or maybe some of you might have that neighbor in your neighborhood like Kathy and I did in the very first neighborhood that we lived in. That neighbor who you wonder, man, are they, like, they in the witness protection program or what? Because you don't know their name. They go straight into the house, and our entire neighborhood did not know the name of our neighbors that live right next door to us. And so Kathy and I, we went on a mission. One Christmas, Kathy baked up a plate of goodies, and we went next door, and we are getting their names today. This is the day. And went over, and we rapped on the door, and they opened up the door, and we both greeted them warmly and said, hi, we live right next door to you. My name's Greg. Kathy's like, my name's Kathy, and I don't think we ever got your name, as we're handing a plate of cookies over. And they took the cookies, said, Merry Christmas, and shut the door. And I'm like, are you kidding me? We still don't have their names. Never got it. Never got it. But what kind of neighbors are we supposed to be? Good news neighbors. What kind of neighbors are we supposed to be? The kind that everybody wants living next door. The kind of people that people are going to give you the key to their house. And Jesus, he had something to say about that. It's in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 10. And we're going to be looking at verses 25 and following. You can pull it up on your phone. You can grab the Bible in front of you or grab your own Bible. Or just listen. Because the way that the original hearers heard the Word of God is they actually heard it. Before this thing called the Gutenberg Press that cranked out a Bible for everybody, people just listened. What does God have to say to me today? And as we jump into this text, I want you to know that the writer of this, his name is Luke, thus the Gospel of Luke, but he also wrote another gospel called the Gospel of Acts, two of them, and he wrote them both to a man named Theophilus, the purpose of which, at least part of it, the purpose of which was to let Theophilus know the way of Christ, to let him know that this way of living that Christ lived, it matters, that Christ coming into this world changed everything, and that we are invited now to step in and to live by the power of Christ in us, the Spirit in us, to live in a way that we bring good news wherever we go, and we paint the world beautiful by the way of our living, because we're following the way of the one who made this world beautiful when he stepped into it. And Jesus told the story that follows these words. On one occasion, an expert in the law stood up to test Jesus. "Teacher," he asked, "what must I do to inherit eternal life?" "What is written in the law?" he replied. "How do you read it?" He answered, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all of your mind. And love your neighbor as yourself." "You have answered correctly," Jesus replied. "Do this and you will live." But he wanted to justify himself, so he asked Jesus, "And who is my neighbor?" In reply, Jesus told him a story. A man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho when he was attacked by robbers. They stripped him of his clothes, beat him, and went away, leaving him half dead. A priest happened to be going down the same road, and when he saw the man, he passed by on the other side. So too a Levite, when he came to the place and saw him, passed by on the other side. But a Samaritan, as he traveled, came where the man was. When he saw him, he took pity on him. He went to him and bandaged his wounds, pouring on oil and wine. Then he put the man on his own donkey, brought him to an inn, and took care of him. The next day, he took out 2 denarii and gave them to the innkeeper. "Look after him," he said. "And when I return, I will reimburse you for any extra expense you may have." "Which of these 3 do you think was a neighbor to the man who fell into the hands of robbers?" The expert in the law replied, "The one who had mercy on him." Jesus told him, "Go and do likewise." So this expert in the law, and we're not talking about a lawyer here, we're not talking about a judge here, in the way that we think about law, we're not talking about a police officer who has studied law here. We are talking about a lawyer, we're talking about a judge, if you will, in religious law. We're talking about one who had studied the first 5 books of the Bible so much so that he had them down by memory, had studied the ins and outs and conversed over it so he understood the nuances of the first 5 books of the Bible called the Torah or the Mosaic Law. This expert in the law had 2 questions he wanted Jesus to answer. First question he was asking the rabbi Jesus was, "What is it I'm supposed to do? Tell me what I'm supposed to do to gain life. I want to know what your answer is." And the second question he had is, "Who's my neighbor?" Now the first question, what Jesus did with it, is what Jesus almost always did with questions. He would throw them back. He would raise a question to answer a question. And he looked at the man thinking, "What are you asking? What are you asking? You're asking me what the law says about what you're supposed to do, how you're supposed to live. You're the expert in the law. You're the religious lawyer. You've studied the first 5 books of the Bible. You have them down by memory. You already know. You tell me what you're supposed to do." And his answer is this. He says, "Love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your strength and with all your mind, and love your neighbor as yourself." What am I supposed to do? I'm supposed to love, 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 love. Love God with my heart. Love God with my mind. Love God with my strength. Love God with everything I am. And I'm supposed to love my neighbor, even as I love myself. Love being the operative word. And what Jesus does with that is he applauds him. Well done. Great job. Yep, you've answered correctly. Now go do it and experience life. Go do it. Here's a second question, okay? My second question is this. Who's my neighbor? I got this God thing down. I understand that. I'm supposed to love God, heart, soul, mind, and strength. And I'm supposed to love my neighbor. I just want to know who my neighbor is. I want to know what the parameters are. I want to know where the line is. I want to know how big my neighborhood actually is. I want to know who my backyard butts up against and who I'm supposed to allow in my backyard. I just need to know. It's sort of like if we were to drag it into our context here. Okay, I got it. I'm supposed to love the people that are on my street. I just don't know if I'm supposed to love the people on the next street over. Are they my neighbors too? Or, yeah, I'm supposed to love the whole block that I'm in. And maybe I'm supposed to love all those, but all of Hudsonville? Or I'm supposed to love all of Hudsonville and Jenison? Got it. But do I have to consider the people way out in Moline? Are they my neighbors too? Or I can love the people in West Michigan, but the UP, are they my neighbors? Is that my neighborhood? Is that it? Or I can love the people that are in Michigan, but what about the East Coast and the West Coast? Are they my neighbors too? Because they don't always think like I do. And what about those people that are not in the USA? Is my neighbor just my USA people, or is it the people over the border, like Mexico, Honduras, Nicaragua? Is it overseas? Is it the people in Syria as well? Jesus, tell me. Rabbi, who's my neighbor? Who are they? Makes me think about the neighborhood that Kathy and I originally were in, our first neighborhood where we bought a home, and we had two dogs that were playing out in the backyard. Often the neighborhood kids would come over and want to play. Just little kids wanted to play with the dogs in the backyard. And they would open up the gate and they would go through and play with the dogs. And occasionally we'd find that the dogs got let out because the kids, they're kids. They forgot to shut the gate. And so what I did is put a padlock on the gate. Not to keep the kids out, but to keep the dogs in. We told the children, if you still want to play with the dogs, just come through the house. And they took that seriously, like for real. And we had one little kid, and I think his name was Derek, if I remember right. I'm sitting at the kitchen table, and here comes Derek. He's ignoring me. I'm like, hi, Derek. Hi, Mr. Vandermeer. Whew, straight to the backyard. He's going to play with the dogs. And I love that. I loved it. And I think about coming home one day, Kathy and I and David and Kylie were coming home from church when we lived up in Muskegon, a different home. And we pulled into the driveway and the garage door went up and opened up the door. And I looked and there sits David's best friend, Cam, sitting in my chair with his feet up on the ottoman. And he's got the Sunday paper rolled out and he peeks behind it. And he's looking and he goes, welcome home, family. What's for lunch? He knew where our key was. He knew how to get into the house. And we laughed and had fun with that. Think about another friend of David's. His name was Tom. And Tom was having some difficulty in his home with a stepfather. And at one point he just went, I just can't do this anymore. And conversing with the parents and conversing with Tom. And then eventually Kathy and I are like, we'll bring him in. Spent 3 months with us, almost every single night with us before the family relationship was able to get healed up and get back home again. We've had a home like that. Like, our home is wide open and we want our home to be that. In fact, first service, I invited them all over. Kathy, I just invited the whole church over because you're welcome over too, all right? And we got one K-cup away from having a cup of coffee on. If you all show up at the same time, it is going to be crowded over there, but we're going to have fun, all right? And that's the kind of home we want. And Jesus, I got this love God thing, but what does it mean to love my neighbor? And more specifically, who's my neighbor? I want to know how big this thing is. This guy is asking a legitimate question. It's a legit question. Because he was an expert in the law, he knew the first five books of the Bible, and he knew what it said. And so he's asking, not who lives next door to me, but who's my neighbor? And in Leviticus chapter 19, verse 18, it says these words, that you are not to seek revenge or bear a grudge against any among your people. Catch that. Your people. But love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. So this guy knew, this expert in the law, knew that most rabbis during that day were linking up the word neighbor. We have to get in a different context, different time, and understand that neighbor to them meant your people, meaning the Israelites. So most rabbis would answer, who is your neighbor? It's your fellow people. It's the people that think like you and talk like you and act like you and worship the God that you worship. That you are to live as if you're to love them as yourself. This love for others and neighbor was linked to the people that are like me. Jesus, who's my neighbor? The people like me, who think like me, who go to church with me only? Is that the people? Now, if he was a real expert in the law, which he likely was here because it says he was, that he would have also known what followed in the book of Leviticus, that would take that image and say, not just my own people, but a little bit bigger, because in chapter 19, verse 34, we read this, the foreigner among you must be treated as your native born. Love them as yourself, for you were once foreigners. I am the Lord. Who's my neighbor? Okay, I got it. It's all of us. It's us. It's we who are the Israelites. I got it. And Jesus, I understand that it's also the foreigner who's among us, that person that's moved in among us, who doesn't speak our language, but they're trying to figure it out. And they're learning it as a second language, that when they move in, we treat them like they are native born. We don't mistreat, but we treat them like one of our own. Got it. So Jesus, who's my neighbor? Who's my neighbor? And Jesus tells a story. And in the telling of a story, it's like he lights a fuse to blow up a puny, small understanding of neighborhood that would say it's us and those who move in with us. He says this. So there's this man. He's walking down from Jerusalem, 2,500 feet above sea level, making his way down to Jericho, 800 feet above sea level. And as he's passing by on that road, this road here would be the road that he's passing by on, it is a treacherous, desolate place. It is a 17-mile hike from 2,500 feet all the way down to 800 feet in rocky terrain that is dangerous. Dangerous enough that Jesus hardly has to point it out and says he's abducted by robbers. Yeah, that's what happens on the road to Jericho often. They lay in wait and abduct people. And he was left half dead traveling down this road. And notice what the scripture says, where it says next, that there was a priest that was coming by that was going down the same road, going the same direction. And a Levite that also passed by. We don't know exactly in Jesus' telling if he's referring to this Levite actually going the same direction or he's going another direction. But at least for the priest, we know he's going down the road. That's a detail I believe Jesus put in there on purpose. Why? Because a priest and a Levite, they had ceremonial duties that they would perform in the temple that you had to be clean. There was all kinds of religious laws about what made you clean and unclean. And if you touched a dead person, you were rendered unclean for a period of time. And you were not allowed to perform your tasks in the temple. There was a Samaritan that was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho that was abducted. and a priest that was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, meaning he's going this direction, and the temple's where? The temple's that direction. The temple's back up in Jerusalem. He's walking away from the temple. So he doesn't have to worry about being made ceremonially unclean. Doesn't have to worry about that. Because his duties are already done. He's going the other direction, 17 miles. He's heading on foot the different direction. Plenty of time to get clean again, to go back to the temple to perform his duties. What's his excuse? Because it says he walks on by, takes a look at the guy, and actually crosses to the other side of the road. Now, it's also known that the priests, more often than not, they were prone to snobbery. They had this image of themselves, that they were better than the common folk. They were not to associate with common people. And so both of these things could have been mixed in. And he's gone, I don't even want to mess with becoming ceremonially unclean. Not that it matters, but it's just a commoner anyway. Walks on by and Jesus is asking the question, who's your neighbor? How about that guy? I mean, that's offensive what he did. Offensive. Certainly not neighborly. The Levite did the very same thing. Are you kidding me? Walk on by and leave the guy for dead. Not even checking to see if he's okay. Walks on by. And then Jesus drops the bomb. He said, there's a Samaritan. A Samaritan. All ears perking up like, what? A Samaritan comes by. Already knowing what's going to happen because the blood between the Jewish people and the Samaritans, not good. In fact, all of the literature, almost all of it that comes from both sides, points to this hostility that is between these two parties of people that is deep. And we've talked about it here before. That it's too much to dive into it all today. But the hostility was real and they wrote about it. So we know where this is going. Samaritan. He's going to walk on by just like those two did. Maybe even spit in the direction of the dead person if he is dead. But what happens is Jesus lit the fuse and is about to blow up this idea of neighbor. He stops. He walks on over. You all right? Oh, man. He's still alive. Takes oil and wine, begins to clean up the wounds and bandage them up. Gently as best he can, picks him up and puts him on top of his own donkey. Takes him down the road where he checks into an inn. Was he going to go there in the first place? Don't know, but he has to now because this guy's in need. Checks into the inn all night long. He's attending to his needs, getting him food and water, nursing him back to health. In the morning, he's doing a little bit better, but he has to go on his way. And so having spent his own money and cared for this man all night long, he leaves extra money with a man that is in charge of this inn and says, will you take care of him with this money and make sure he's okay? In fact, I'm going to put my name on the line. I promise you, I will be back tomorrow. And if there are any other expenses that are incurred, put them on me. I will bring money to make sure that this man is cared for well. And Jesus said to the man, oh, I love this. Because what Jesus did, the first question that the guy has, this expert in the law, what am I supposed to do? Jesus goes, you already know. You already know. You tell me what you're supposed to do. He doesn't answer the question. Tells him to answer the question. He says, love the Lord your God with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and your neighbor is yourself. Well done. Do it. And then he says, who is my neighbor? And Jesus says, well, let me tell you a story. Then I have a question for you. Who's your neighbor? Which one of these? You tell me. Which one of these was neighborly? And the expert in the law doesn't say the Samaritan. He doesn't even use that term. But he's forced to answer the question and says, the one, that one, that showed compassion, that one was neighborly.
And Jesus tells them the same thing he told them on the first question. Now go and do likewise. Go and do that. Let that be your mode of operation in this world with the people that are on your street and in your block and those that are in your community, those that are in the other community, in Moline, up in the UP. Let it be the East Coast, the West Coast, across the borders, across the sea. Let it be. Because Jesus was saying that it's not just Leviticus 19, that you do it just for your people. It's not just Leviticus 19:34, that it's also the foreigner that moves in. He's blowing this thing up and saying, it's the Samaritan that's not in your community, that's on the other side of the border. Those that you despise, those are the people that we, they did it in this story. This Samaritan did it in this story for that man. Go and do likewise. Be a neighbor to all. Your neighborhood is global. It's the world. Stop nowhere with your mercy and your compassion. For God so loved the world. God showed compassion to the world. You're a son and daughter of the Most High God, the DNA of the Father into His children, that we might be like that. I was in Uganda. I think I've been there 10 or 11 times now, somewhere around there, but I was in Uganda in February of 2017 with a group of some of the college students from our church here, and I had a chance to go cross borders and to represent us, because we have 120 plus children with the Compassion International. My parents, our parents, when we were growing up, they sponsored a child. Kathy and I have done that. And we had a child at Namakosi, one of the 120 plus, at a particular site that is our church site. It's ours. And those kids are ours. And I had a chance with our college students to go and visit those children there. And it was amazing to see on a piece of paper this face of a little girl named Ketra that Kathy and I are sponsoring, and my daughter Kylie, our daughter was there with us, and Kylie was trying to warm up to Ketra, and the children there, for the most part, they're very reserved, very shy. They raise them differently than us. In fact, children in Uganda will not typically look an adult in the eye because they're taught not to do that. And I, coming from America, my first time there, I would get on a knee to talk to a child, to get at that child's level. First time I did that, I went down on a knee and the kid got down lower because they wanted to stay lower than me. And I went, what's this kid doing? I'm not joking. This kid put his head on the ground like, you cannot get lower than this, man. And so to warm up to Ketra, it took some time. And Kylie put on all the charm she could. And after about maybe an hour of being there, finally Ketra started warming up a little bit to us. Fast forward the story. I just came back from Uganda. And I was going to visit Namakosi, all of our 120 plus children that are at this set. I was going to visit it and save the visit to the last because it's my favorite part of doing. And I was there with just one other guy, another pastor from our Harbor churches, Walker Harbor Church, with Wally. And so it was a Saturday, and a week later, we're going to be at our site. The next Saturday, we're going to be at Namakosi to see all these children, and I was going to be able to see Ketra. And we were at this event a week prior of maybe 8,000 to 9,000 people that were gathered there. And I get that I kind of stand out in Uganda, that I'm taller than most of them. My skin is white, and most of them are not. And there were three white people in the crowd, and we stood out a bit. But still, you have to figure there's 8,000 to 9,000 people in this crowd. And we sat, I kid you not, it was a 6 hour, and I counted the minutes, 6 hour and 24 minute worship service. True story. No complaints from any of us, right? We never did 6 hours and 24 minutes, but 6 hours and 24 minute worship service that we were at. And afterwards, I was walking through the crowd, making our way over to the celebration afterwards, and I felt a tug on my coat. I was wearing a sport coat. And I turned around, knowing it was some kid, and I just didn't know what kid, and I looked down, and it was Ketra. It was Ketra. She found me in a crowd.
And I instinctively, I just dropped to a knee and I pulled her in before she had any chance to lay on the ground in front of me. And I pulled her in and I pulled her tight. And I was absolutely overwhelmed. Like, this is going to be the highlight of my 2018. She found me in a crowd. She hunted me down and came and initiated this with me. And I pulled her in and I said, "Ketra, Ketra." And she, in my ear, head right here, she said, "Hello, Daddy." And I went, "Oh, my word." And I started to cry. I'm a mess. You know, I'm sitting there crying. And I looked at her and I said, "I'm going to come see you on Saturday at Namakosi." And she said, "I did not know you were in the country." And I said, "How have you been?" "I've been fine, Daddy." And I'm like, this is unbelievable. Unbelievable. And the children in Uganda, from a very young age, they learn English enough that we could converse back and forth for a few moments. I want to show you a picture of our child. She adorable. Ignore the clerical color, please, but look at her. Look at her. That little, in Uganda, they all wear clerical collars, not all people. Clergy do. So I'm not putting on one here, just letting you know. But I had a moment with her, and I honestly, it moves me deeply. That moment was so powerful, so powerful. And I thought about you. How many of you have a child there, and how many of you still could? And I know not all of us can go. It's not feasible that we would all go, but if you were there, I just want you to know that you who sponsor children, you matter so much to them that you have chosen to be a neighbor to a child on the other side of the world. You matter so much to them, it could have been your coat that they were tugging on. It could have been the hem of your garment that they're pulling on to say, "Hello, Mommy. Hello, Daddy. I didn't know you were here." So that next week, we made it over to Namakosi, and we were at the site. And while we were at that site, in fact, if you could pull up that picture, you can see some of the children there. These children, they had a sign out that says, "We are now safe. God bless. You are welcome." And what they're saying, when they use that word welcome, they're like, "You are so welcome here. We are so glad that you came." And what they're saying when they're saying we're safe now is somebody in our church heard that their backyard at that school didn't have fences on it. And the children, it just wasn't safe for them. And this gentleman from our church said, "I'll put the fence up." And they put a fence up around this building. Thank you for doing that. And they're saying, "Thank you. Thank you for the fence. Thank you for being there with us." And you can just leave this picture up as I tell the story here. But with these children, we had some time to share stories. And I walked around with Ketra and with the Nielsens, Drew and Becky's child. He grabbed my hand. We were walking around the site as they're giving me a tour of the buildings. I've seen them before, but they wanted to show me again. And I saw them again. And then at the end of it, having sung together and I shared some words with them and they blessed us, they said, "We want to do a skit for you. Can we do a skit before you leave?" And I went, "Sure. Yeah, we would love to see your skit." And so Wally and I sat down in these two plastic chairs and all the children, the next picture please, all these children were lined up like this and we're seated on this side. And they began to read a story out of the Bible and act it out. And the story that they were reading is the story that we planned some months ago to preach this morning, the story that we've been talking about, Who's Your Neighbor? And so a little girl standing there with a microphone starts to read in English the story of the Good Samaritan. And there's this boy that's going down the road. And there's a little boy, he's about this tall. The backpack is so big, it's hitting him in the back of the head. It's the cutest thing. It's bouncing off his bottom as he's walking, because he's just this little kid, as he's walking with his backpack. And he's going down the road toward Jericho, and he's abducted. Four little boys jump out of the crowd, and they're like so energetic, like, "Man, I get a chance to thump my buddy in front of all these people." And they're taking their coats, and they're hitting this guy, and he falls to the ground. They rip the backpack off, and they're laughing as they're running away. And she continues to read the story. And then a priest comes by, and the cutest little girl came by, and she walks by, and in her accent, she said, "Oh, so sorry. What happened here? I will pray for you." And she went like this, and I went, "Not Catholic." It's not Catholic. It's a priest in the Old Testament, right? But whatever. It's beautiful. Keep going. Keep going. And so the next kid comes up, and it's a Levite that comes by and dressed in kind of a purple thing. And, oh, so sorry. What happened here? And continues on. And then the Samaritan comes by. And I love, it's the cutest little girl that comes by, little thing that came over to a little boy that's laying there. And she said, oh. What has happened? And she began to anoint him with oil and clean his wounds. And then she picked him up and put him on the back of another little girl. That was a donkey, I guess. And she's on all four. And I'm like, these kids are tougher than I was when I was a kid because it's all rocks. And she's four-wheeling on these rocks. I'm like, oh, that looks like it hurts. I wanted to pick them both up and carry them. And they went over to another little plastic green chair, put them in the green chair, which is the inn, and then took care of them, told the innkeeper, I will be back tomorrow, I promise, and I will cover all of your costs. Skit is done. And I'm like, well done, kids, well done. And we're smiling. I thought it was very well done, and we were ready to leave. And then the narrator, just a young girl, maybe 6 years old, 7 years old, said, our dear visitors, who is the neighbor? And I looked over at Wally, and I thought it was a rhetorical question, and she was going to finish. And I looked over, and I went, I just wanted to know how smart I was. I was the one that shows compassion, right? And Wally kind of chuckled, and then she said, we would like for you to answer that out loud. And I went, okay. They handed me a microphone, and I said, it's the one who showed compassion. And she responded, you have answered correctly. I went, I got a master's level in theology. Oh, yeah, I got this. I got this right here. Right? You have answered correctly. And then she said, and this is what you have done for us. Thank you so much for loving us and for loving me. And she put the microphone down and walked away. And I was, again, a pool. Like, I did not see that coming. This is what you have done for them. You've been a neighbor. Jesus asked the question, so who's the neighbor here? Now go and do likewise. This is how we're supposed to live. I found out during that tour that there are 51 children that are still waiting to get sponsored. As of this morning, we're down to 46 children that still need to be sponsored. I'm telling you, I'm carrying a burden in a different way. When I heard that, who's going to stop by and you go, man, this is an emotional tug. Yeah, it's pretty emotional. But when I walked by this site and realize there are 51 children. Now we're down to 46 of them, 46 of these children that still need to be sponsored. I'm not letting go of that. Not until they're sponsored. And I don't know what that actually means. It may mean that some of you here are feeling that too, and you're maybe you catch me after worship like some did first service, or maybe you'll send me an email. Maybe you're going, I'll make sure that we get 10 kids sponsored, and I'll find people to do that. But these children, they need somebody that will step in. And this is just one story. I'm just talking about one story. This is just one. There are so many other stories. Jesus just told one story and then asked the question, which one of these is the neighbor? Now you, it's your turn to go by neighborly. Father, we ask now your blessing on this word to our hearts and our minds for your glory. Because it's all about you. You are the first one that went the distance to be our neighbor when you moved into the neighborhood in the person of Jesus Christ. When you went to the cross. When you rose from the grave. When you claimed us as your own and invite us now to do as you did. Bless us in that living that we might experience life eternal here and now and forever. In your name we pray. Amen.